It's the Earth Day celebration at the DGDG Mazda stores. Capital Mazda, Stevens Creek Mazda, Concord Mazda, and Team Mazda. Hey, it's Sean Del Gran. And this April, we've got outstanding offers on brand new Mazdas. Plus, we've partnered with One Tree Planted to help reforest areas of Northern California. We pledge to plant one tree for every vehicle we sell. Don't miss the Earth Day celebration at the DGDG Mazda stores in San Jose, Concord, and Vallejo.
You're listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide, brought to you by Coors Light.
Scores! Logan Couture wins it in overtime.
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
Couture jumping out of the ice, pivots for the puck. He's in the neutral zone. Logan carries up the middle, across the line, stick handle, shoot, stick save, made by Ranta. Couture got it back. AC Mons looking for it. Can't get it. Andrei Svechnikov the other way. Two on one. Only Benning's back. Andrei Svechnikov. Lead pass. Nature shoots. Score! It is an absolutely stunned San Jose Sharks team that comes off the bench. Gloomy looks on their faces as they skate off the ice after this game ends. Martin Nechas on a two-on-one with Andrei Svechnikov scores 55 seconds into overtime. His 21st goal of the season. He tied the game with 12 seconds left, and he scores at 55 seconds of OT to give the Hurricanes an absolutely incredible come-from-behind 5-4 overtime win. And the crowd here is absolutely thrilled, but on the visiting side, it is absolute despair.
Yeah, we've had a season of incredibly disappointing losses. And, you know, I just love the way we played for 50, you know, really for most of the game. And it was just a real good effort by our guys. Get down 2-1 early in the third, battle back. Up 4-2 in the minute. 50 to go and just complete blown coverage on their third goal. Just, you know, got to protect the middle of the rink. We don't do it. And, you know, the fourth one, the puck never touches the ice on the drop, but you got to, they shoot it from the corner, hits the side of the net, goes right to Aho on the side, which is really, you know, it was nothing blown coverage. It was just them throwing the puck to the net, hits the side of the net, and goes right to Aho on the back door. So, yeah, just really disappointing.
Considering the Sharks have already experienced some very, very painful losses this year, I thought for sure we had experienced the worst loss of the year up to this point. At least that's what I thought entering last night's game. And then last night's game happened, and it proved that there was a new low, a new pain, a new awful feeling. Because when you go up 4-2 on the road, you think you are about to have one of your best wins of the season, and then quickly it turned into heartbreak. I mean, I would say that words escape me except for the fact that I have used the same words and the same phrases and the same expletives and the same thoughts and emotions so many different times this year when the Sharks have looked like they were in a position to win a game. I mean, that is what is so stunning to me. It's that you look at this pattern that has happened where the Sharks, late in games, have multi-goal leads and it is not able to turn into a win. I mean, I have often joked about, I don't know what deal the Sharks made with the hockey gods to come back against Vegas in Game 7 of the 2019 NHL playoffs, but the hockey gods are getting their payment in the form of absolute pain for the San Jose Sharks. I mean, it is unbelievable to see the different ways in which the Sharks have discovered the ability to lose this year. And I go back to the idea that the Sharks are not a terrible team. This is a team that has consistently proven over the course of the year that they can play with anyone. Like, they really, really can. There have not been too many painful losses in the sense that they were blown out. There have been painful losses in the sense that they have just shot themselves in the foot and done everything wrong and made mistakes at the wrong moment and had blown coverages and just been in every game. I mean, for the most part, the Sharks have a chance to win pretty much every game that they play in. Or I'll at least say like 75%, which if you do that, you're giving yourself a pretty good chance in the NHL. It might even be higher than that. I'm just guessing 3 out of 4 games, they pretty much give themselves a chance to win. Against New Jersey, they had a chance to win that game. Against Columbus, they had a chance to win that game. Against Detroit, they had a chance to win that game. And beyond that, the team last year did have the ability to win games. They were not winning tons of games, but again, the talent level overall in the forward grouping was not as good last year. And you have to balance that with the fact that you still had Brent Burns last year, but also this year, Erik Karlsson has been going off and, you know, producing the points that he would score, and Brent Burns, you know, in one man. I don't know. I mean, it's just utterly confusion at this point that I feel in my brain when I'm watching the Sharks figure out new ways to lose. Because again, you score an empty netter, you're up 4-2 with under 2 minutes to play. That is a win for every other team in the NHL. And I mean, even Columbus, I mean, even whoever you want to attribute it to, that's a win. But it's not for the Sharks. A 4-2 lead at home, under 5 minutes to go, that's a win for most teams in the NHL. It's not for the Sharks. I mean, we have seen multiple times this year where the Sharks have blown multi-goal leads late in games and lost. And I know that there are many people out there that want the Sharks to, you know, lose as many games as possible so that they get Connor Bedard. I mean, there's no guarantee, A, and then B, like, what is this doing to their mental state right now? How do the Sharks feel that fire the same way day after day after day, week after week, month after month, when they know this is hanging around? I mean, as soon as they went up 4-2, I actually had the thought in my head. I was like, I don't know if they can hold on to this lead. And it was almost a perverse laughed at thought in my head when it came up, but I was right. And I don't like being right about things like that. But because the Sharks have done it so many times this year, it immediately entered my head as something that might definitely happen. And then after the fact, when the Sharks lost, I'm just walking around my house just going, you know, what the blank over and over as my wife laughs at me. It's stunning to see these types of losses happen consistently to the point where they are relatively predictable is baffling. And I tweeted this last night, but my point was, I would say it's unbelievable, except for the fact that it is entirely believable at this point. I mean, we have seen this happen multiple times this year. Multiple times. And the thing was, is that in a game like Carolina, like, the high-level players are going to take out the high-level players and vice versa on each team. And that's what made it so impressive that the Sharks were getting goals and points from Essiemont, Ferraro, Bonino, Lindblom, Svechnikov, Lawrence, Sturm. It was like, okay, you're not getting it from Karlsson, Couture, Meyer, Hurdle right now, but you're getting it from other guys. Like, other guys are getting it done. Other guys are stepping up. And then it all just blows up in your face. Unfortunately, I don't have the post-game sound from Bonino, but he was incensed. I mean, he was about as pissed off as I've ever seen him. I mean, we've seen some pissed off Nick Bonino over the last two seasons. But last night, he was just, I mean, it looked like he wasn't quite at a loss for words, but it looked like he was holding back a little bit of what he wanted to say, probably because he knew he didn't want to curse on camera, you know, something to that effect. Like, he was pissed. He was angry. And he said it. He was going on about the fact that, you know, they're in every game, they give themselves a chance to win, and they absolutely collapse at the wrong moment in multiple games now. I mean, we see this over and over and over again. And I would say that we are at the end of it, except for the fact that I don't think we are. Like, there are clearly more and more games where the Sharks are going to have this happen. And I say that not with any sense of joy or any sense of, look at me, I'm a great prognosticator. But when it comes to sports and teams, you have to say past performances in any given season, past performances are indicative of what you might see in future performances. And that's what we've seen all year long from the Sharks, where they can play with anybody, but down the stretch, their inability to win games, to close out games, even when they take a 4-2 lead off an empty netter with under 2 minutes to go, that's not enough for them to win. And that is, again, to me, just staggering, just absolutely unbelievable. The late collapse is believable, but the way that they did it last night is unbelievable. I mean, here's some NHL info from ESPN Stats and Info. The San Jose Sharks scored an empty net goal to go up 4-2 with a minute 52 tonight and lost. They are the third team to score an empty net goal in the last 2 minutes of regulation and lose the game. The others, the 2019-2020 Sharks, remember, against Washington, and the 1969-1970 Red Wings. And historic losses like this are the kind of things that can roll around with the team for a while, which is why I'm so glad that they are playing today, as they can try and get it out of their system against Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh, you know, battling and holding on for the wild card. But at the same time, you know, this is another challenge for the Sharks, but good. I mean, move on, get it out of your system, try and focus on anything other than what happened last night. And it's going to be hard to forget. The guys are going to wake up this morning knowing that they had an absolutely epic collapse last night, that the NHL world is kind of laughing and poking fun at them. I mean, even that article that I read, you know, talking about the Sharks, you know, start off with the Sharks have had some epic losses over the years. And yeah, they have. Every team in the NHL has had some epic losses, but because of the Sharks' inability at this point to have won a Stanley Cup at this point in their franchise's history, people pile on. And the only way to change this is to start winning. And that's exactly what Mike Greer was tasked with when he came and took over the San Jose Sharks. It was his job to provide the course correction to get this team pointed in the right direction and get them building towards a better future. I didn't expect that to happen this year. If you did, I'm sorry. It's going to take some time. However, I don't think anybody expected the losses to be quite as painful and as brutal and as next level as they are for the Sharks this year. This was something that I did not foresee. I thought the Sharks would be bad. I thought at best they would be a bubble playoff team, but that was a highly, highly unlikely scenario. But again, the way in which they're doing it this year, it's like they're very good at giving you hope, but they want to give you hope only to snatch it away and kind of laugh at you for having hope in the first place. Because there is a lot of good to build on out of these games. Like, the Sharks have done very, very good in a lot of different games where they've given themselves a chance. And all you want in professional sports when you're in a position like that is to give yourself a chance. But, like, the other side of this coin is the Sharks could have been a feel-good story this year. Like, they could have been a quick bounce back, a quick turnaround, a team that was not going to languish, you know, in the cellar of the league, that they were going to be right there as a bubble team and battle deeper and deeper into the year. I think they, you know, if you look at the way that the losses have happened this year, they probably would have outpaced what they'd been doing last year if they had, you know, gotten even a smattering of the points that we thought they would get out of these overtime games and just some of the games that they were, you know, leading late or even had a close to normal home record. It just has not gone that way. It hasn't gone that way in the slightest. And yeah, when all is said and done, you might give yourself a better chance to draft Connor Bedard, but you better hope that he's good. You better hope that he is exactly what the franchise needs if they end up getting him, because to go through a season like this, I feel there are even longer-term reverberations and ramifications because, again, like I alluded to earlier, this type of stuff gets in guys' heads. You know, it was in my head when they went up 4-2 with 2 minutes left that I hope they can hold on. I did not used to think that way about the Sharks. I did not used to think that way about any teams in the NHL. I used to hope that the Sharks would be able to come back from multi-goal deficit late in games, and sometimes it happened. But the Sharks were also an absolute powerhouse, and it didn't usually happen with less than 2 minutes left to go in a game. Last night was unique, I'll put it bluntly, but it also, again, was in the realm of possibility for the San Jose Sharks because we've seen it. We've watched it. We've witnessed it. And the other part about this that gets frustrating for me is that it wipes out the good that we saw from the team throughout the course of the game, or at least it feels like it. I mean, we saw James Reimer make huge saves throughout the game. We saw Simon have his best game as a Shark. We saw Mario Ferraro, you know, be in the right place at the right time, you know, getting that empty net goal. You saw Nick Bonino getting a goal. Like, you saw so many nice performances. Nico Sturm battling his tail off. I mean, just so many things throughout the game where you're like, hey, look at the Sharks do it again. They're going toe-to-toe with one of the top teams in the NHL, and they're looking like they belong. It gives you a reason to believe in the future. It gives you reason to believe in what is coming next, and then it's gone. I mean, it fades that quickly. And I get it. I know these guys need a break. I know they are looking at the horizon and thinking, my God, the break is almost here. Then I can let my body get some rest. I can get some recovery. I can get some time with my family. Like, all these things are completely valid. And I don't think that is a distraction in the slightest for what the Sharks are trying to do. It's just a matter of getting there in one piece. And they have one more opportunity today against Pittsburgh to get there in one piece. And yes, they are going to go back out on the road after the All-Star break. And they are going to be in a tough situation once they come back from the break, because they're going to have more good teams on the East Coast. They'll see Tampa and Florida and Washington before they come home to face the Penguins on Valentine's Day. And then they'll be at Vegas on the 16th. And then they get an extended homestand to close out February. Buffalo on the 18th, Seattle on the 20th, Nashville on the 23rd. Chicago on the 25th, that's the Patrick Marleau night. And then on the 28th, it's going to be Montreal before you get into the month of March, when you're going to have St. Louis at home on the 2nd, Washington on the 4th, then you're on the road at Winnipeg, at Colorado, at St. Louis, and then you're home again for an extended homestand, Minnesota, Columbus, Seattle, the Islanders, then back out on the road at Edmonton, at Vancouver, at Calgary. Then you're home again to close out the month versus Winnipeg and against Vegas. And then we get into March. And I know you're like, Ted, you don't need to take me through the schedule, but it just shows you what's on the horizon. You start off April with Arizona on the road, then your home, Colorado, and Edmonton for your final three home games. Then at Winnipeg, at Calgary, and at Edmonton to close out the regular season. It is 30 plus more opportunities for them to find a better close to the year than what they've had through the first 50 games. And last night was game 50. Today will be game 51. And yes, while past performance is indicative of what you can expect and or predict in future performance, the Sharks also have the opportunity to redeem themselves, to give themselves the ability to bounce back in a way that they were not able to through these first 50 games of the year. And you have to hope that things can change after the All-Star break. Get a mental break, get a little bit of a palate cleanser, come back renewed, refreshed, and reinvigorated for the final 30 games of the year. Easier said than done, I know, but it's what I'm hoping for because games like last night just aren't any fun. All right, we're going to be back with some post-game sound, plus we're going to talk with Curtis Pashelka. You're on Morning Tide.
That to-do list you have needs one more thing. Chill. It's an easy thing to do. Just crack open an ice-cold Coors Light and chill. Take the afternoon off and binge watch anything. Go to happy hour and stay for a couple hours. Who's counting anyways? Or hang out with just your dog because you've had enough human interaction this week. Whatever you do, do it with a Coors Light. Mountain Cold Refreshment made to chill. 2020 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Celebrate responsibly.
Welcome back to Morning Tide, brought to you by Coors Light.
Extra a skater coming on. It's Svechnikov. Kane's behind the Sharks' net. Stick handling, holding it. Stall. Martinuk, the shot in front. Fed to the empty net by the Sharks. They score! Mario Ferraro shoots the length of the ice surface and scores into the empty net. Everybody on the Sharks' bench on their feet to celebrate this one. It's 4-2 San Jose with a minute 52 to go.
Well, we're going to get ready to play tomorrow night, so that's something that we've got to focus on more than anything. Unfortunately, we've got a lot of practice in losing games in this fashion, and I'm very disappointed for our players because I thought they did a really good job and played hard and deserved a better fate. And just unfortunate that we weren't able to get out of here with 2 points.
Welcome back, everyone. You can hear it in David Quinn's voice last night, just a little bit of that deflation. And I can't blame him. It was stunning to see the Sharks lose in that capacity. And it really just seems almost inexplicable up to this point to see it go down like that. I mean, I was stunned. Again, I'm still stunned. I think David Quinn was stunned. I think Nick Bonino was stunned. I think everybody was stunned after that. You get an empty netter with less than 2 minutes left to go, you're winning that game. Unfortunately for the Sharks, it didn't go down that way. Let's go back to the Sharks having just gone up 4-2 off of Mario Ferraro's goal. Suddenly, the Canes found their way right back into the game.
Stretch here. There goes the goaltender again. 2-on-1. Here comes Aho. Gets behind the defense. Shoots. Score!
That is when the dread set in for me. Here is head coach David Quinn.
Yeah, no letdown. Just, not protecting the middle of the rink, really. Which, we should have gone and just established our forecheck, and they still had the goalie in. Just go play the way we had been, and we didn't. We backed off instead of going and playing hockey. And we're outside the dots. Both D have to be inside the dots, and we weren't. And really, to give up a breakaway like that is really frustrating.
And then, how do you bounce back from such a painful loss?
Well, like I said, we've had a lot of practice dealing with situations like this. So when we have turned the page and we're going to have to do it again tomorrow night. It's our last game before our break, and we battled hard tonight against a really good team. And you guys have watched us do that all year long for the most part, and we'll do it again tomorrow night.
They've got no other choice but to do it, and that'll be tonight now as the Sharks look to bounce back from what is the latest worst loss of the year. All right, I wanted to get into my conversation with Curtis Pashelka that I recorded yesterday. If you want to hear the entire thing, check out the build-up. But we talked about everything surrounding the Sharks. And I started asking him about his reaction to the trade that's Neitz and Merks sent to Colorado.
Well, I was maybe just a tad surprised at the deal just because I thought maybe Matt Nieto might get traded a little bit closer to the deadline and that the Sharks might try to maybe acquire a pick for him, a draft pick for him for this upcoming year or this upcoming draft this year. So in that respect, I was a little surprised. You know, you delve a little deeper and you see a Colorado really doesn't have that many picks to begin with for this upcoming year. They've got a first, a fifth, and a sixth, and a seventh. So they've already traded away their second, third, and fourth picks for this upcoming year. So so anyway, I think, you know, when you look at the deal, it's, you know, Ryan Merkley for Martin Cott. Understand what the process was, what the thought process was for that deal. You know, two players you could probably use, a change of scenery. You know, obviously Ryan Merkley had requested a trade and was looking for another opportunity elsewhere. And I think Martin Cott was kind of reaching that point too after he's put on waivers earlier this month. So so you can understand from that standpoint. You know, like I said, I think Matt Nieto is, you know, not necessarily a guy who's going to put a point a night or that kind of player, but he served a very valuable role for this Sharks team in terms of his penalty killing, in terms of his reliability as far as a middle six forward. Mm-hmm. You know, he was well liked in that locker room. How he helps add to the culture in that aspect. You know, Jacob McDonald's still a little bit of a question mark as far as whether or not he could be a full-time NHL player. You know, the Sharks, you know, we'll see what happens when Radim Simic is able to come back again. I tend to think that sometime after this long break here, he'll be much closer to be able to play again in that instance. Then what happens is to McDonald's, does he just go back to being kind of a seventh defenseman? Does he get sent back to the American League? Kind of have to wait and see. So it's one that's kind of good. You'll have to kind of see how it all plays out before you really get a judgment on it or a real handle on it. You know, you'd see what happens with Martin. I think that's part of the key to this deal. How does Martin kind of pan out? Mm-hmm. You know, is he a guy that, you know, with a change of scenery, with that he can sort of unlock what made him sort of a first round pick, you know, 5 years ago? Can he get back to that type of form, sort of that kind of flash that he had back then? And can the Sharks bring it out of him? And if so, then, you know, you look at a pretty nice return on for a quality player, like Ryan Merkley and Matt Nieto. If not, then, you know, it's one of those things that you kind of have to, kind of live with, I guess, if those kind of deals. But maybe it's the chance that you know, Mike Greer and his team was worth taking at this point.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see how they do use McDonald, because obviously they've got Knyazhov coming back as well. He's been doing his conditioning and rehab stuff with the Barracuda, but obviously the injuries to Šimek, Čičak being not quite there yet. It is interesting to see where this goes. And then Quinn also talked about the potential of McDonald being on the power play.
Yeah. You could certainly slide in on that second power play unit at the very least. That's probably makes a lot of sense for him to do that too. Cause really, I mean, you've had, you know, a guy like Mario Ferraro in that position and Matt Benning in those positions, that position before. And then those, you know, those guys didn't play poorly there at all, especially Benning. I thought he did a nice job back there, but you know, if you got in a little bit more, slightly more offensively minded defenseman, in McDonald in that role, that's going to certainly help, even if it's maybe just for a minute or two per game in a second unit sort of role. That would be beneficial for him and sort of add to his value to what he can bring to this team.
Quinn talked about Noah Gregor getting more time on the penalty kill, and that's actually something that I like, because when we've seen Gregor in limited capacity before, I felt like he did work hard on the penalty kill, and I think that also opens up more opportunity for him. I wanted to get your reaction to that. And also, one of the things that I do wonder about with Gregor, Curtis, is the fact that he's so fast and he's so exciting and, you know, the classic wing type player, but I feel like all of his goals come in the dirty spaces. He poaches below the hash marks. There's almost a little bit of Joe Pavelski about him. Is his game maybe misclassified because of his speed?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, once you get to the national, he was you know, one of the leading scorers, you know, for his junior team in the WHL, and he was a very, you know, productive player at the American League level as well. But once you get to the National League, it's a situation where there's only so many players that get those top minutes. And, you know, sometimes players have to figure out a different role for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether it's more of a grind type role. And obviously, Noah still has to use his speed whenever possible. But you're right, you know, getting in some of those dirty areas, being a guy who can get in on the forecheck and be a little bit more physical, a guy. And if a situation where maybe he flourishes in this sort of penalty kill type role, mm-hmm. and that allows him to sort of stay in the league for a long time, that's a benefit for him. And so I think when David Quinn mentioned this morning that this is a real opportunity for Noah, you know, to maybe round out his game a little bit, I think that's something that could really work out in his favor if he's able to do that sort of thing. You know, Matt Nieto was, you know, he was a big time scorer in college, but you know, in the NHL, he was kind of the same type of player in some respects. He was a very fast player, but just mm-hmm. maybe had trouble finishing and that kind of thing. I remember when he spent a lot, you know, some time on Joe Thornton's wing, you know, for a couple of years there in the Todd McClellan era. And, you know, while he was certainly an energetic player, he was never a guy who could, you know, really fill the net kind of thing, yeah. especially if you're playing with Joe Thornton, you're expected to produce offense. So, you know, maybe this is a way for Noah to sort of evolve in his pro career, is to take on sort of, and just realize that, you know, there's a certain way to stay in this league, and maybe this is the type of player he has to become.
Another guy who used to play on the wing of Joe Thornton was Kevin LeBanc, who had his best year in 2018-2019 when the Sharks made that deep run to the Western Conference Final. Yet he's a guy who has not been able to quite recapture that form. But I felt that this year, until he was sat down for a few games after he had that big defensive error, as I try to talk here, before that, I felt like he'd been playing some pretty good hockey and he'd been more aggressive. And, you know, part of that aggressiveness, I feel, is he takes some bad penalties. So you take the good with the bad. Were you surprised by how long Kevin got sat down?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was, you know, they sat him down after that Edmonton game. He sat down for the Jersey game. The Sharks played pretty well in that game overall, except for the fact that, you know, for those last few minutes there, they gave up a 6-on-5 goal, and then, you know, losing a shootout. But then they come back and they beat Dallas in the next game, and Kevin's still out. And so, okay, well, maybe Quinn doesn't want to tinker with the lineup too much and just wants to, you know, sit him out. But what surprised me is after that Columbus loss, that Kevin still stayed out. Mm-hmm. After that game, I was kind of confused by that a little bit, because really, I mean, there was a lot of players in that game who just didn't really bring much in terms of energy. And maybe you get some on a back to back, maybe you get some fresh legs in there. You know, it didn't pan out, of course. That's not the way it happened. And then finally, you know, he got in the game most recently on Tuesday there. So, you know, it was a little bit of a surprise to see him sit out that long. I think maybe Kevin was, you know, he didn't agree necessarily with the reasons why he got sat out, but he just said, hey, what's done is done. Like, all I can do now is kind of control what I control going forward. And so he had a good attitude about it. At least after the shock wore off, he kind of just said, okay, let's try to figure out what I need to do and to stay in the lineup now. And, you know, I mean, he's a player that, you know, he still has one more year left on his contract. David mm-hmm. Quinn's not going anywhere. He just, you know, so can Kevin consistently find a way to do what David Quinn wants him to do and stay in the lineup, you know, for the rest of the season here? I think that could go a long way into determining whether Kevin's going to be long for the organization, is whether or not he can, you know, get on the same page with Quinn here over these last 2-3 months of the season and really find out for himself and find out what will make him, you know, what will keep him in the lineup and be a productive player like he has been at times throughout his career.
Again, to hear the entirety of that interview, check out the build-up game 50 versus Carolina. Always a big thanks to Curtis Peschelka talking all things Sharks. And we are just about out of time, but remember to join me this afternoon on the build-up. You'll be able to catch that at 1 o'clock on the Sharks Audio Network as they get ready to take on Pittsburgh and go into the break. We are out of time. Always a pleasure joining you, and I hope that when we meet again on Morning Tide, we'll have a much less painful outcome, win or lose, to talk about. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
You've been listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide, brought to you by Coors Light on the Sharks Audio Network.